Trend number 5. Extraordinary Popular Delusions, 2012. In 1841, Charles McKay's book, Extraordinary Popular Delusions and the Madness of Crowds, chronicled how, time after time, investors have been caught in a frenzy of speculation. In the early 17th century, investors sold their houses to buy tulip bulbs that they then hoped to sell to other investors at higher prices. In the early 18th century, investors inflated both the South Sea Company bubble and the Mississippi Company bubble. In each case, people allowed themselves to be swept along by the idea that they could get rich by investing in something that would keep increasing in value, even though this idea defied logic. Because so many people were chasing the same delusion, increasing numbers of people were infected by the madness of the crowd. As McKay explained, men go mad in herds, while they only recover their senses slowly and one by one. That return to sanity only happens when each investor comes to the painful realization that there is no greater fool to be found, and the shares he feverishly purchased are worthless. If McKay were alive today to write a sequel, he undoubtedly would add chapters on the dot-com bubble at the turn of the century, the housing bubble of the last decade, and the Facebook IPO debacle of 2012. Each of those investment manias followed the classic pattern McKay identified, in which people's judgment becomes so clouded that the thought of the investment not going up never enters their mind. The only negative they can imagine is the price skyrocketing without them on board, and everyone else making a killing. So, they jump on board. All delusions are fed and nurtured by anecdotal evidence that is rooted in truth. The delusion many have of winning the lottery or of getting rich at the blackjack table in Las Vegas is supported by the fact that some people are indeed allowed to win. The delusion is that people think they will be among the tiny few who will profit, even though the casino and the lottery thrive on the losses of millions of people. Likewise, in the financial world, there are data that fuel the IPO delusion just as surely as oxygen gives life to a fire. This data comes in two forms: high valuations of startups that have not yet gone public, and stock prices of IPOs that have actually risen and remain higher than their initial offerings. The first should be considered pure froth. The second, like winners in Las Vegas, are certainly the exception, not the rule. According to the Wall Street Journal, there are now at least 20 Silicon Valley closely held startups backed by venture capital that are worth $1 billion or more, according to their valuations. 15 of these have been added since the beginning of this year. Pinterest, an online scrapbooking startup, is one of the latest to reach this milestone. Launched in 2009, the company received $100 million in capital in May and is valued at $1.5 billion despite showing little revenue and no profits. Pinterest joins many other billion-dollar web companies, including Dropbox Incorporated, a file-sharing company, Airbnb Incorporated, a room rental provider, Reardon Commerce Incorporated, an e-commerce platform company, and Workday Incorporated, a business software maker. According to an analysis by Dow Jones Venture Source, the number of startups valued at $1 billion exceeds the number during the height of the dot-com bubble in the late 1990s. This means there are plenty of players with the potential to ignite the IPO fires and imaginations. And then there are the few IPO winners, such as LinkedIn. In May 2011, this startup went public at $45 per share. By the beginning of July 2012, it was trading near $110 per share. It is this kind of success story that reverberates in the minds of those looking for the next big score. They fail to learn from the IPO failures, such as the online coupon site Groupon, which has dropped more than 50% from its initial offering price. Friend Finder Networks, which IPO'd at $10 per share and has since plummeted to under a dollar. And Zynga, a company that provides social media games that has dropped more than 40% from its initial stock offering at the end of 2011 of $10 per share. The long-term prognosis for startups should be instructive for investors as well. Of the private U.S. companies that were valued at $1 billion or more back in 1999 and 2000, only a few are still in existence. Most have lost much of their value, while many have disappeared. Despite these results, investors are still blinded by activity, such as Pinterest's surging user growth rate, bringing 20 million unique visitors to its site per month. According to Comscore Incorporated, this is the fastest-growing standalone site it has tracked. But what should be a key factor in the equation seems to be glossed over. Pinterest has virtually no revenue. And then there is Facebook, which was valued at $67 billion as of early July 2012. As anyone who has read McKay's book would realize, Facebook's share price of $31 is driven more by hype and speculation than by reality. Those standing to gain from this inflated value would have investors believe Facebook is the next great technology company with tremendous strength and earning power. In reality, it merely sells individual ads, making it an ad sales business, not a technology company. The risk is that this revenue stream can be fleeting, as evidenced by General Motors' decision to stop buying ads because there was no proof that their Facebook ads were translating into car sales. Facebook is just the latest example of the madness of crowds. Earning money requires hard work and taking risks. However, it seems like every few years a significant proportion of the population deludes themselves into thinking that those rules no longer apply to them. Whether we're talking about 17th century Dutch tulip bulbs, 20th century dot-com stocks, or 21st century American houses, the story is the same. And we're seeing this old story play itself out once again in the era of the social networking IPO. Based on this trend, consider these forecasts. First, Facebook is unlikely to live up to the hype of its IPO. Facebook's forward P/E ratio is 40, meaning that its stock is currently priced at 40 times the company's expected earnings for the next year. By contrast, Google's forward P/E is 11. And Google has a proven track record of profitability and a solid business model for generating revenue growth. Facebook, by contrast, still hasn't figured out a viable way to make money from the 900 million users who come to its site to connect with friends, but not to buy products. Second, expect other social media and internet IPOs to launch amid a frenzy of hype, only to disappoint investors in the long run. Consider again those 20 closely held companies for which venture capitalists have set the value at $1 billion or more. Venki Ganesan, a venture capitalist at Globespan Capital Partners, has serious doubts about those valuations. Ganesan points out that, as of today, there are only 23 publicly traded internet companies with market capitalizations of more than $1 billion. He asks, can we really double the number of internet companies that have over a $1 billion market cap? That feels statistically hard. And third, while speculative bubbles will always be with us, the next 30 years are likely to see far fewer of these events than the past 40 years. Every techno-economic revolution goes through three stages: installation, disruption, and deployment. Speculative bubbles increase in frequency and severity through the installation phase, and their peak creates much of the turmoil of the disruption phase. Ever since the mid-18th century, this pattern has reliably repeated itself. The fourth techno-economic revolution was based on automobiles and mass production. The fifth techno-economic revolution is based on integrated circuits and information processing. The installation phase that ran roughly from 1971 to 2000 saw a growing number of bubbles, which has peaked during the disruption phase that started in 2000. However, as we move into the deployment phase, bubbles will largely disappear, and the relative stability of the 1950s and 60s will return. This does not mean we can let our guard down completely. It just means we are likely to see fewer and fewer meltdowns on a regular basis.